Welcome to the Family Express podcast, where our destination is resilient and connected families. Come aboard with your hosts, marriage and family therapists, Catherine DeBruin and Rhonda Evans, to explore the world of emotionally focused family therapy, a model developed by Sue Johnson and colleagues. Together with our guest speakers, our travels will map the EFFT landscape, highlighting lessons learned, shared fears, and the passion and curiosity that bonds our community.
Welcome back, listeners, for our next episode of The Family Express with Catherine and Rhonda. This episode is actually a part two with our guest, Norma Brito de la Cuesta. Be sure to check out part one in an earlier episode, and she's a wealth of information, so we're going to pick up where we left off last time. Hi, Norma. Thanks for being here today.
Hi. How are you?
Good.
Nice
good.
To be here.
Fantastic. Thank you for being here. Let's jump into it, shall we? For a brief introduction for Norma, she is located in Costa Rica and she works with families. Episode one covered topics such as parenting goals, discipline, communication, education, and family structure. And for this episode, we're going to jump right into the next topic, which is gender roles. Norma, help us out with gender roles in families.
Okay. Gender roles in family are really interesting, and they are changing along the time. In Latin American countries, we still have a little machismo, where the position of the man, the head of the family, as a religion set it up in most of the countries, make a division between the roles really important, because when you are in a normal traditional family, girls are going to be around the kitchen and laundry and doing things like cleaning up, but the guys are more in charge of maintenance on the house and taking other activities they don't have to deal with the care of other people. Women do that. Since they are little, they are in charge of taking care of their smaller siblings. And even though they are similar ages with the boys, they need to look after them too. That gives sometimes the eldest daughter a role that is like the second mom for the family. And during those times where she is a big help for the mother, is a nice place to be. But when the rest of the family is growing up, is a little complicated because everyone wants to step aside and do things by their own. And when this elder daughter in charge is trying to be there for them, they would act like, oh, no, this is no more. You're not my mom. Come on, take your place, please. And that makes for eldest daughters a big issue when they are trying to find their place while they are growing up. Moms and dads give that position, and sometimes they triangle that eldest daughter. And that happened in other cultures too, because we are expected as women to be there and help others in a nice, important way. The boys are not asked to do those things. And sometimes, for example, in rural places in the country, girls need to serve the meal to the brothers, the boys in the family, because that is part of what they are expected to do. In the past, they were not expected that much to go to the university. Now, this has been changing, and women are expected to do both things. Take care of the people around and the rest of the family, and also to go on, move on, make a family, and be professionals. So there's a lot going on there. A lot of fighting is going on during early years, because most of the girls are always saying, why am I going, I have to do this. Why you're not asking him? No, I don't. This is not a guy, a boy's task. Come on, help me with this. Help me with that. And fathers are not really around, so they have a little more time to do different things. Also, we are supposed to behave in a different way. And women need not, or girls need not to be rude, even though boys can be rude, and that is part of what is expected from them. And sometimes we need to understand and to follow things, trying not to make trouble, more trouble at the house. Now things are changing, and there are a lot of women going on and moving on, and girls and boys are beginning to be taught to participate in activities at home that doesn't happen before.
Norma, thank you so much. So related to gender expectations and roles, you're saying it's very important to assess what the expectations are on the different genders in the family system, and to also, to both understand those pressures and to try to maybe have families be more explicit about these role expectations so that it makes more sense to the children growing up and the families why they might be treated differently. And go ahead.
You're absolutely right. We need to be careful. And when we are beginning our assessment and working with them, we need to be sure that we are understanding how things work within the family. Is a traditional family or is not a traditional family? What is expected for the boys and girls to do? Are they treated equally or they are not? Because sometimes they are not. And of course, they need to understand. And now they ask. And they and the parents need to explain why things go this way. Is responding to what sometimes? Okay, my dear, I need this from you. And can you help me with this? Yes, that is not fair. Yes, I think that is true. We are going to think this over. And sometimes really help the parents to understand that little changes within what they are trying to teach is important, because this is what we really do. Help families to move on, adjust, and help them through the changes that are needed to be done in order to all the members to feel listened and seen.
Very nice. Thanks for that practical example, Norma.
And also, we have talked about responsibilities and opportunities. In the past, we usually find that men or boys have more opportunities to do different things, while girls not so much, because they want to have the girls more close. Now we have learned that girls and boys need to be close, and they both need to be taught and loved, and that is not going to change who they are going to become, because there was a fear in the fathers that if they were emotionally close to their sons, they were going to spoil them. So they only let themselves be really gentle and nice and physical with their daughters. This is now changing, and we need to ask on this topic too, how they were raised and what kind of difficulties they have met raising girls and boys. Because sometimes what we were raised with makes a difference and limit our ability to be really close to boys and girls because of the way we think about what is good for boys and good for girls. So ask about it is really important to and help them walk through the need of the attachment bond with both and see through the attachment lens the needs in the boys and in the girls for closeness.
Norma, this is really fascinating to hear because gender is a very important topic in the world right now. And in some cultures, I think we tend to stay away from any kind of genderizing. And you're saying in some cultures, it's very important to distinguish between expectations in parenting different genders. And so you're bringing up some important assessment questions to ask in a family, like maybe starting out with something very general. How does your parenting, how do you think about gender? Is that something that you think about? How much time do you spend thinking about this? How do you see gender? And then after that intro question, one can really go into more specific questions around whether they parent differently.
Yes. Also, it's important when you have more siblings, the position in the family, because I talk about the girls and that work, but also we need to talk about boys. And when we have large families and sometimes the father is not available, one of the eldest brothers take that position too and helps the mother and sometimes become like a couple too. And they have a really close relationship. So I would ask really how things went during the first years and how many brothers and sisters do you have with the position that you are in and what do you feel they expect from you being the eldest or being maybe the second one, but you have an eldest brother that has an inability. And then you're expected to do better because it's important for the family. So I would really ask about how it is to be a girl in your house, in your family, and how is to be a boy? Do you think that this makes a difference? Because sometimes when you ask this way, not like in a general way, they could say, you know, now that you asked me, I think that it was more difficult for us, the girls, to go to school, keep doing things, and invest the money they have to send the kids to school is okay. Sometimes they decide, how do they decide who's going to this kind of education or the other? Because that difference could hurt kids while they are growing and make them believe things that not necessarily are the truth for that families. We need to find if there are privileges or difficulties. And also, I would love to put something there too that are the loyalties. How was for you to be the daughter closest to your father, or to be the son most close to your mother? What does that feel? Because that makes a huge difference sometimes.
Okay, thank you, Norma. So not just asking about expectations in terms of gender, but really thinking of how children are placed in terms of the sibling lineup, and then what expectations might fall on each of those roles. Rhonda, what's our next assessment question?
Our next one is a cultural identity, which is inclusive of immigration, traditions, rituals.
Okay. When we work around cultural differences, they are small ones and big ones. And what is more valuable is to just ask about what are the most important traditions at home, the meetings, how you get together, what rituals do you have, what celebrations do you need to be in, and how does it feel in each of one? Sometimes the traditions, when you come from other places, when you immigrate, are more important than for the families to lose. One of these celebrations is a huge thing, because there is not only the tradition, but also all the family getting together. The grandparents, the uncles, the nieces, everyone is coming over, and it's felt like a rejection if someone didn't exist. They need to go there and be present and be part of the celebration. Younger kids are more free to go around and move, and maybe there are positions for some of them of importance in those rituals. So we need to really ask, how does this work in your family? For example, in my family, I was born in Cuba, and I came to Costa Rica when I was small. And in Cuba, they used to celebrate not the Christmas as it was, but the Reyes Magos. I don't remember the name in English. And for us, after we came, Christmas was less important than our day to meet as a whole family was the last day of the year. And for my family, it was like, we are here together and we didn't know if we are going to be together next year. It was like a sad tone in the getting together, but also a big thing for us being able to be together and share together. So I think that those things are really important, because are the part of the family. And we cannot let that skip from our interviews or interventions, because we need to know what makes you the family you are. What are the traditions, the activities that are important? Are they religious or non-religious? And how does it affect the kids that are growing up the teenagers, because that sense of belonging and being part of the peer group at the same part of being part of the family sometimes is troubled by what you are planning to do in these times that other families get together in a different way. For example, in Costa Rica, what they used to do for the last day of the year is to go to the beach. And during my teenage times, my friends cannot understand, why are you staying at home with your parents? This is not a day to stay there. And that was hard at first, when finally I find the importance for everyone around and also for me, it doesn't bother at all to stay home and be with family instead with friends. That was what Costa Ricans mostly do. So yes, these are important things. What makes you the family you are?
Thank you, rituals? Mm-hmm. Thank you. Thanks so much for that construct, finding it out about family culture and rituals, and then also breaking it down in terms of what kind of distress could show up in a family system because of some of that, you know, maybe being misunderstood either within the family or between family members and other people in their community. So I was initially wondering, like, how does this relate back to a family session? But I think you've made that really clear. Rhonda, what's our next one?
Our next one is peer influence, which I'm leaning into the adolescents and teens here. I'm curious, Norma, what you have to say.
Okay. Here, in every place, peer influence is such a topic. The expectations from the parents for the kids to be good and behave properly, and for them to do the right thing, but also be part of a huge group. And sometimes specifically to a small group you want to belong because they are nice and they have more friends and they do different things. So along our countries, this has become also a problem sometimes because traditional families don't give too much permissions to go around and do different activities. Now, dances and activities where it's like huge event, and most of the parents are panicked because of the use of drugs, the vaping, and alcohol. That is a problem at this point, because when kids are really overprotected, they are so close to their families that they don't develop the security and the drive to say, no, I don't want this, or I want it this way, just because they find out that, okay, I don't have permission to go to that party, but I can have permission to go to my friend's house. So I am going to go to my friend's house and we are going to the party together without my parents knowing that we are going to that party that I know that I have not permission to go on. And I don't have permission to drink either. And let's do it all at the same time. And that is hard on the kids because they want to do things right, but sometimes they are not able to talk properly and defend what they need to do and how they are feeling, and ask to the parents a little more flexibility. And when they cannot talk easily and fluently with the parents, then this happens more and more. And kids get into much trouble because in their desire to belong, they lose control. And then those friends that push that girl or that boy toward doing different things feel betrayed because that boy or that girl get drunk and vomit in the middle of the party, and now they are ashamed to go with them, and a lot of things happen there. So I think that it's so important to work with your families, explaining how important it is to have a secure relationship, a relationship where our teenagers respecting the differences and the needs and feel safe to come to us and ask some things, and know that being really restrictive is going to push them toward the side that we don't want them to go.
Thank you, Norma. It's happening to me again right now as I listen to you, as I listen to Kathy Stavros and to Gail Palmer. Just that need for that secure relationship to have been like lay the foundation of that as we go into the adolescent years, because then our kids can turn to us. And it does kind of help offset a little bit of that peer influence. I just think what you're saying is, it's such a tricky time, right? Navigating the influence of their peers, parents wanting to instill their values and hoping they've laid a good foundation of that. And if the kids, quote, make a mistake, just really hopeful that that secure foundation has been laid so that the kids can turn to their parents.
Yes. Yes, they need to come to their parents, because if they don't feel safe, then this is going to throw them into a negative cycle with their parents, because they want to have a good relationship. Parents want to be there for them, but they didn't find the way to be together and attune to the different needs they have. And when a teenager feels, gosh, nothing is enough. No matter how I try, how good I am at my grades, nothing ever is right. Nothing pleases them. Mm. And you are trying to do that in the right way. And there is another part that, okay, let's go have fun. Let's do this. When are you going to leave? You're only going into the books. Come on. Let's have a little fun. Mm-hmm. And have the measure of that fun.
Yeah. Let's move on to the next one. Thank you so much, Norma. This last one here, there might be a lot to say about it. And so kind of based on time, let's see what we can tackle today. You have here respecting diversity.
Yes, respecting diversity in so many ways, because we need to embrace and celebrate diversity in our families. We need to encourage teenagers to learn and appreciate different cultures, traditions, and perspectives, and ways of living and relating to each other. When we expose our teens to diverse experiences, we can monitor how they are learning with us in order to develop empathy and tolerance and a broader view. Because, you know, now they're talking so much about bullying, and this is so strong in our schools that we need to make an extra emphasis to teach and practice empathy and be careful with the comments that adults make toward different subjects, because our kids learn from what we do, not only from what we say and what we teach them they have to do. Our example sets the norm on how they are going also to be with other people. And that is why it's so important for us to take time to be with them, to go to different activities. They need to have a life and they need to go out by themselves. But when we are together and when we share experiences, we need to remember that we are there to create safety and security.
Okay, thank you. Gosh, Norma, thank you so much. Today has felt just a little more rushed because we didn't have quite as much time, but we really appreciate you covering the last five of the things to assess when you're meeting with a family. And it is a very thorough list that you're giving us with really important nuances in how to understand the distress that families might be coming in with. And so the distress could be coming from any one of these areas. Mm. And if we're going to tune in and understand this distress, we really need to start with just understanding, who is this family sitting in front of us? How do they see the world? What is important to them? How do they regulate, right? What relationships are vital? What customs and rituals are important? What is expected in terms of the role of where you are in the sibling order, or what gender that you're a part of? Any of these factors can lead to distress, right? Between families and kids, between children and their outer community, as conflict happens, right? Where the family is expecting one thing, but the child is wanting something else. And I think being a part of a family is about balancing all these needs and managing the conflicting needs that come up at different times, depending on the system that you're a part of. So you've really given us a lot to think about in terms of these 10 different areas. I'm even thinking for myself of having a list of the 10 and then keeping a family in my mind and thinking through, have I asked anything about this for this family? Which area am I leaving out? You know, how do I do in my assessment? Am I likely to emphasize some of these and then not even think about others just because they're not true for my particular culture? Mm-hmm. So this is a very, very rich list, Norma. I really appreciate you giving us these to think about.
Thank you. It has been really nice to be with you. I love to share this time and this work that we do with family is so, so important, and so important to attune to every little aspect in families in order to be able to guide properly those parents that want to be the best parents they can and met their kids' expectations, but sometimes it's difficult to do this because the expectations get caught in the middle and the kids need different things. Yeah. And they want them to understand them, but we are not understanding all the pressures and the things that are going on for them too, in a lot of different ways. So really, thank you.
Exactly. Well said.
Just a wealth of perspective, Norma. And I was about to say information, but I really think it just really broadens my perspective when I think about families with this list that you've given us. And recognizing that the way I kind of see my job is I'm supposed to like sniff out distress. That's kind of how I characterize myself. I'm supposed to find the distress and managing the expectations and the values of the parents and what they're trying to instill into the kids and into the family system, with the kids and the teens learning to attune to what they want, what they desire, and then being able to bring that forward. And like Catherine said, balancing the two. And I think at any age, not just teenager age, but I think at any age, it can happen where the distress can come up. For example, like my kid wants to stop doing gymnastics. And I'm like, no, you're going to stay in gymnastics. You know, and he's five and he's saying, I don't like this. I want to do something different. And so right now I kind of feel my first experience of balancing what I want for him and what I want to instill in him versus what he's saying he's not really interested in. And that's just a five-year-old example, but I think it happens at any age and stage, and it can be in any one of these areas. So I just really appreciate you organizing all of this for the family therapists. I think this is so organized and makes it a really helpful cheat sheet. So thank you, Norma.
Oh, thank you. Thank you a lot for this opportunity. And let's always remember that as therapists, we have a big responsibility. And one of our biggest responsibilities is keep in mind that what makes you different makes you unique. And sometimes being unique puts you in trouble because it's different for some people to understand that even though you're part of this family, you're a little different and you want different things. And keep in mind that when the way we were raised always is going to bring us to a place where we need to think, is this because I really believe this has to be done? Or is because I was raised this way and this pushed me towards something that I can rethink? Because rethinking is part of being able to talk to different people and attune to different people and empathize to the different situations. That is what we need to do.
Well said. Thank you so much. Thank you so much, Norma.
Thank you, Norma, so much. Thank you, Rhonda.
All right. Thanks. Cheers. Ciao.
That's it for today, folks. Thank you for listening, and we hope to see you again for our next journey.